safety. Can you get us out of here and past security? None of the six pairs of ears has heard the intruder, the giant of a man who now stands between us and the exit. Oh shit, I think. Maybe I say it out loud, maybe I don't, but I hear it, clear as a klaxon. The man who has silently come into the lab is the last person I want to see. And the one I've kept seeing all this week, always when I don't expect to, as if his sole task is to watch us. Poe. Now I realize, maybe that was his task all along.
Leave everything and come with me, he says.
Petrosky's hand goes to the 45 on his hip, and I follow Lorenzo's eyes as he tracks the motion.
Don't be stupid, Dr. Rossi,
Poe says. I open my mouth to speak. Nothing comes out. Poe looks over the soldier standing between him and the rest of us. It seems as if one eye stays trained on the gun, while the other surveys our little cadre of rebels. He steps forward, slides the 45 from its holster, and racks the slide.
Better if I have this for now.
Nodding to Petrosky, he says,
You first, then Dr. Rossi. Ladies, single file, just like in school. And don't say a word.
We line up, and Poe takes the rear, following us through the chimp room. At the doors, he instructs Petrosky to open them, and we walk the short distance from the lab to the nearby service elevator. It's already open. And inside is a face I recognize like a mother recognizes her own child. 75. The elevator doors might as well be the very mouth of hell, complete with their ominous, abandon all hope warning inscribed where the lighted numbers should be. Still, I step inside, following the others. Hope be damned. This is my son. Stephen slumps toward me, suddenly more boy than man. In 2 days, he's grown leaner, and the rippled bones of his ribs rise and fall under my hands as I draw him close. Wherever Poe is taking us, we're on this trip together. Poe interrupts, gently breaking this mother-child embrace.
Time for that later, Dr. McClellan. When we get to the main floor, don't look up and don't speak.
He takes 3 black bands from his hip pocket and passes them to Lorenzo, Petrosky, and me.
Put these on. No way, Lorenzo says. No fucking way.
Petrosky blanches, shaking his head.
They're plastic, Poe says. Just do it. Sergeant Petrosky can't get you out of here, but I can, as long as you do what I tell you.
I snap the band around my wrist as the elevator doors hiss closed. The men do the same. I look a question at Poe.
Go ahead.
What's going on? I say, bracing myself for the familiar jolt of pain. Nothing happens.
Trust me, Poe says. Keep your heads down and, I don't know, try to look tired until we get past security.
Not one of the people in the elevator, including me, I note as I catch my reflection in the polished steel wall, needs to be told to look tired. I check Lorenzo's watch and see that it's 2 in the morning, but an entire year might as well have passed since Morgan brought us back here yesterday afternoon. Poe presses the button for the main floor.
When we get out, you stay in line and get into the back of the van.
The ride up seems to take an hour.
Okay,
Poe says.
Ladies first.
We file out, Lynn, Isabel, Jackie, then me. I feel something press against my back as I leave the elevator, and for a brief, irrational moment, I think it's the barrel of Petrosky's 45, but it's warm and reassuring. Lorenzo's hand.
I'm right here, Jana.
He whispers. Where there were 2 soldiers, I now count 10 pairs of shined boots. 1 pair steps forward smartly.
Can't let them leave, sir, a voice says. Dr. LeBron's orders.
I'm itching to tell him Dr. LeBron isn't going to be ordering anything in the near or distant future, although he may be putting in a few requisitions for ice while he burns in hell. I find myself smiling and bite the insides of my cheeks. Poe, directly in front of me, waves a familiar-looking envelope. In the upper right-hand corner is the presidential seal.
In the left corner, where a return address would normally go, is a silver embossed capital P.
Tell him,
Poe says, handing over the envelope. There's an anxious rustle of paper as it's torn open, and the letter inside is unfolded.
Fort Meade, the soldier says. I see. All right, then. You know where to go.
Then, in a gruffer voice,
Stand aside, men. Let them through.
Whispers circulate around me. Isn't that the doctor? Hey, he's the kid on television last night. I think I know her from somewhere.
Damn, 7 today.
Burke's quote comes back to me, the same one Stephen paraphrased when the men came for Julia King. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. As we pass by the rows of boots, as I hear the whispers and murmurs of these men, I can't decide whether I feel disgust or pity. Maybe it's a mixture of both. Lorenzo is the last to climb into the van and takes a place next to me on the bench. Before Poe closes us in, I note an uncomfortable absence of windows or of an interior handle on the rear doors. Terror creeps under my skin as the engine fires up, and I wonder if we've just been played.
Everyone okay?
A voice says. It's male, soft and low. I recognize it, but can't place the timbre.
Turn your lights on now, Christopher.
That voice, it's so damned familiar. When the lights flicker on, illuminating not 7, but 9 faces, I see why. Dell and Sharon are in the back of the van with us. I reach out to take Sharon's hand, squeezing it. She squeezes back, and I almost want to fling myself into the arms of this woman I barely know.
Time for that later, she says. Sharon, honey, you get to work on those bracelets,
Dell says, pointing to Jackie's, Lynn's, and Isabel's wrists.
You remember how to do it?
Sharon rolls her eyes.
I did our girls, didn't I?
Then, addressing me, she adds,
Man, they all think they're the only experts.
She plants a kiss full on her husband's lips.
Don't you worry, honey. I love you till you're dead. Maybe a while after that.
She works with the same steadiness on Jackie's counter as Lynn did when trepanning the chimpanzee.
You might get a little buzz, girl, but don't say a word unless you want both of us knocked on our asses. Dell's good, but his key isn't the same one those goons who put this on you used. Okay, ready?
Jackie nods, then looks directly at me.
There,
Sharon says, a note of triumph in her voice, and moves on to Lynn. The first words out of Jackie's mouth are exactly what I expect.
Holy fuck! That was worse than that fucking meditation retreat I went on 20 years ago.
Same old Jacko, I think, and talk to her, really talk to her, for the first time in 2 decades. 76. By the time we turn into the raised dirt track that passes for a driveway, Dell and Sharon have sketched out everything. Poe's successful undercover work, Dell's staged arrest, and Stephen's rescue.
That part was easy, Sharon says. He was one floor below the lab, along with a few army guys who thought they could take over the building. Didn't work. Those boys have more brawn than brains.
She looks over at Petrosky, who's staring blankly at the air in front of him.
Sorry, I don't mean you, soldier.
By the way her eyes move up and to the left, it's clear this is exactly what she means.
He did just fine, Sharon, I say, watching a glimmer of confidence brighten Petrosky's eyes.
Poe cuts the engine and circles around to let us out. When he helps Lynn down, her tiny hand disappears into his. The two of them together make a ridiculous sort of King Kong tableau. Lorenzo hops out and reaches up for me with both arms.
Jean?
Patrick's voice cuts through the still night air at the same time I let myself fall against Lorenzo. I break away and walk across the dirt road to my husband, feeling a pull in both directions, sensing that I'm being ripped in two.
Thank God, babe,
Patrick says, folding himself around me. When Stephen appears, the three of us stand in a 3-way embrace until Poe has to break it up.
Later, Poe says. Some of us have a long night.
My long night begins with a quick check on the three sleeping bodies tucked up on an air mattress in Sharon Ray's living room. It ends with me collapsing face first on the empty space beside Sonia. The last thing I feel before sleep hits is her tiny chest rising and falling under my arm. The last thing I hear is Poe in the Ray's kitchen, laying out the plans for my escape. 77. Here is how it happens on this last day. Patrick kisses us goodbye. First the twins, then Sonia, then me, and finally Stephen. He pays extra attention to Stephen. You never forget your firstborn, I guess. You don't love them more, but the bond is different, primal. As he drives away with the single vial hidden in his briefcase, I'm glad we don't have a dog anymore. We did once, a silly mix of collie and beagle and shepherd that sat morosely on the doormat from the moment Patrick left in the morning until he came home at sunset. I don't think I could bear watching that dog wait. It's bad enough for me. Everything after his car disappears, taillights glowing in the pre-dawn, is a construct, a video I play while the kids fight over the last brownie Sharon puts out, while Sonia tells her brothers in no uncertain terms that she knows they're trying to cheat at cards, while Patrick's half-empty coffee mug sits on a stranger's kitchen counter, the liquid in it evaporating and condensing into a thick brown sludge. It still smells like shit, this American coffee, but I savor it all the same. Just going to lie down for a minute, I tell Sharon, who's making breakfast for a dozen hungry people. She waves me off with an all too somber understanding, telling me to use her room if I like. I retreat with the rest of my coffee to an unfamiliar place with still drawn blinds and a ceiling fan humming a monotonous lullaby. I see Patrick slowing and stopping at the security gate, holding out his identification card to the Secret Service agent, a man who wears a white squiggle in his ear instead of an embroidered SS patch on his arm. He parks, and I think he looks at the sky, maybe toward that patch in the east where the sun presses through the darkness. The meeting is held over breakfast, but to Patrick it must feel like the Last Supper, and he's the Judas in the crowd, passing a poisoned cup. That was the plan, to put it in the water, or the coffee, or the champagne that will be popped open and poured out into delicate crystal flutes for 12 distinguished guests to sip while they congratulate one another. One is President Myers, another is Bobby Myers, miraculously recovered from his 6-day journey into the land of aphasia. I'll never know whether the brain damage was real or fabricated, but if I had to bet, I know where my chips would fall. There's Reverend Carl and Thomas the Intimidator. 6 members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff are present, also the Attorney General and Chief Justice, both notorious adherents to the Pure Movement. Patrick is number 13. The Judas Iscariot of the Oval Office. As I lie here in bed, numbed by the spin of the ceiling fan, these religious coincidences strike me as funny. Water, wine, 13 men, Reverend Carl and his insanity. They say Christ was one of 3 things, a lunatic, a liar, or a lord. Mad, bad, or God, as the saying goes. I can't believe Carl Corbin is a god, even if I believed in such divine entities. Gods may or may not play dice, but they sure as shit don't load them with mind-altering poisons. My coffee has grown cold, but I drink it anyway. Sunday night, was it only just 12 hours ago? Patrick decided he would dose the water and the coffee first. Then, whatever was left in the vial, he would keep aside for himself, should the need arise. I shudder when I think of this way out, the Judas escape, but Poe tells me Patrick insisted on it. So many well-laid plans go wrong. This is all I can see. Maybe my imagination isn't up to the task. Maybe it's too up to the task, technicolor vivid and laser sharp. After all, who wants to daydream about her husband dying? I check the clock on Sharon's nightstand.
Its hands say this is the time. 78. I don't sleep. I can't. Instead, I walk with the kids to the horse barn, watching Sonia as she leads her brothers on a tour. She's all words now, a geyser of them.
This,
she says, patting the roan with one hand and stroking it between the eyes with her other,
is Aristotle. She's a girl horse, even though Aristotle was a guy. She's also my favorite. Sharon says she's super smart.
As Sonia passes around thick hunks of carrot, instructing the boys exactly how to hold their palms flat and let the horse take the carrot without taking off a few fingers with it, I pull Sharon's mobile phone from my pocket and dial a number. The receptionist is not thrilled with my sudden change of plans.
Mrs. McClellan, he says, his voice as nasal and pinched as Morgan's was.
Dr. McClellan, I correct. He doesn't apologize, only goes on with his lecture.
We schedule these tests in advance for a reason. You were supposed to be here an hour ago. I don't know if we can fit you in until...
I hear papers rustling over the phone.
Until next week at the earliest.
Never mind. I'm not coming in for the test, I say, and end the call.
Come on, Mommy,
Sonia says.
It's your turn to feed Aristotle.
If Aristotle eats any more carrots, Miss Sharon's going to have a mess on her hands. And guess who she'll ask to clean out the stable, I say.
It's called mucking, Mommy.
Sonia looks absolutely ecstatic at the idea of spending an afternoon raking horse manure. Good for her, I think.
Can I be a vet when I grow up?
She says.
Maybe. Lots of school, though. You up for that?
You did it, Mom,
Stephen says. I think my heart might explode, and I know I made the right decision. I'm going back to the house, okay? I say, and leave, wiping my cheeks with the backs of my hands. The left side burns, although not nearly as much since Lynn went to work redoing the bandaging. Still, the salt stings. Lorenzo is sitting on the rear bumper of the van, looking out toward the road, waiting.
Well, he says when I join him, I can't go without the kids. Poe says you have to, even if...
He pauses, as if he doesn't want to say my husband's name.
Even if Patrick succeeds, nothing's going to change overnight. They have our names, they've got pictures, we need to get out of the country.
Where is Poe anyway? I say, changing the subject. My mind's made up. I need 6 passports, not 1.
He left with your husband,
Lorenzo says. Then, looking up,
speak of the devil.
Patrick's car comes at us like a runaway train, skidding to a stop next to the van. A dust cloud rolls over the ground as the driver's side door swings open and Poe climbs out. The passenger door does not swing open.
Where's Patrick? I say. Where the hell is he?
Poe responds by yelling at Lorenzo. I hear every other word. Go, Lynn, stop, bleeding, tried, help, no time. My brain fills in the rest, and I jerk the rear door open, hitting the side of the van. The noise is a dull thud. Inside me, there's screaming, one long and final scream that draws itself out and finally breaks into nothing.
What happened to him?
I say, but I don't need to ask. 79. I planned Patrick's funeral as a quiet affair, but looking around at the crowd of men and women at the Ray's small farm, I realize my efforts were in vain. Neighbors I didn't think cared are here, including Olivia and Evan King. Julia, too, of course. She and Stephen are talking with the tentative air of frightened children, which, I know, is what they are. A few old friends have driven in from the West Coast since air travel has temporarily come to a halt. The entire country is in a state of chaotic transition, thanks to Patrick. In many ways, I still love him. In many ways, I'm sorry he's gone. Radios and televisions have stayed quiet these first few days, and newspapers are running already told stories.
Washington, D.C. is locked down tighter than a bank vault. The hurricane of terror may be over, but we all know a storm will linger. We all know we're still not safe. Dell and Sharon have decided to remain, though, and Jackie's staying on at the farm to help with the resistance, to clear out the rubble and rebuild. "I'll stay too," I tell her after we put Patrick in the ground. "I want to." She treats me with the same heavy hand she always did, back when we were young and stupid. Or back when I was stupid. I don't think Jackie ever was. "You need to go," Jackie says. "Right the hell now." When I try to protest, she puts a hand to my belly. "You know you do, Jeannie." She's right, of course. Jackie's always been right about some things. She takes me in her arms, now lithe and sinewy from physical work, and in the hug, I feel everything. Gratitude, pride, forgiveness, no more bubble around me. "Go on, girl. Your man is waiting," she says, and breaks the embrace. My man. It seems too soon to think of Lorenzo as my man, as my lover, but I feel his hand on the small of my back as he leads me toward the farmhouse. The gesture is so simple and complex at the same time. Part of me wants to turn back, run toward the fresh mound of earth where Patrick is buried, but I don't. I stay with Lorenzo and gather the kids, telling them to start packing. Maybe, though, a small piece of me will remain here at this farm to keep Patrick company. Chris Poe shook his head when I asked him what happened downtown. I insisted, though. It's nice to be able to insist once again, even if the information I demanded was hard to hear. Life throws little ironies at us. So the fact that Morgan LeBron, the incompetent little shit I took care of only a few days ago, was the cause of Patrick's death, held less surprise than it might have.
"I wasn't inside,"
Poe said, his eyes studying some lump of clay between his shoes.
"And Dr. Patrick came running out the side door like a wild boar that smells fresh blood."
I nodded, letting him know it was okay to keep going.
"Yeah."
Poe ground his boot into the clay, swiveling the toe until there wasn't anything left but dust.
"All I heard was lockdown, lockdown, and something about Morgan's memo. Well, that's not true."
Another clay ball suffered under the toe of Poe's left boot.
"I heard shots. You know how they always have those guys on the roof of the White House? The ones no one ever sees?"
"I know."
"Well, I guess that's who fired. I don't know any more to tell you, Dr. McClellan."
"Jean," I said, taking his hand. "Jean is fine." He turned to leave, shoulders low and fists shoved deep in his pockets. Then he looked back.
"I do know one more thing, Jean. When your husband took that bullet, I swear he was smiling."
"Thanks," I said. "That's good enough for me." And it still is. 80. Canada was warm all through June and July, while we waded through the red tape and waited as 6 passport applications wormed their way around Montreal offices. I would have liked to stay, if only through the summer months. Something about the lakes and rivers as heat-drenched days morphed into cool, calm nights was soothing. But home called, and French never came easily to me. Also, I needed to see my mother. The south coast of Italy, by contrast, is anything but calm. Tourists have invaded our sleepy town, and more will come in August. Still, it's the place I want to be. Lorenzo has been working on his project day and night since we arrived on Monday. He says he'll have the serum ready by the weekend, thanks to the notes Poe stole from his office back in Washington. He's promised to take the kids hiking on Capri when he's finished. He's good with them, I think. And Stephen, although leery at first, has grown to treat him like an older brother. I'll take that. We've kept up with the news since we crossed the border from Maine into Canada, and then the Atlantic from Canada to here. The radios and televisions came to life again. The presses started to roll out newspapers. Women marched in silence until their wrists and words were freed. Jackie seems to be at the head of every march. She writes that when she's ready, she'll visit us. I don't think we'll return to the States right away. Not even now that my second country has returned to what it should have been for the past year. Not even now that a new president has taken the keys from the old one, stating in the simplest of terms that he will never see America repeat the damage it wreaked over the past 12 months. With the first 11 men in the line of succession, well, not quite what they were before their own aphasia serum went to work, the charge of rebuilding went to, of all people, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. A funny thing, really, when I think that might have been Patrick's next job. Jackie's also volunteering as a campaign coordinator. Her letter from last week told me all about the midterm elections, how Congress will be back to normal, maybe even better, with all the women running for office. Imagine, Jeannie, she wrote, 25% in the Senate and the House, 25. You should come back and get in on it. Maybe next year, I wrote back, and I meant it. For now, though, Jackie has my financial and moral support. I'm not ready to get into politics, not just yet. The boys love the son and heir of Italy. Sonia's second language is on its way to being as expressive as her first, and everyone is excited about the baby coming. Also, I enjoy watching the women here. They talk with their hands and their bodies and their souls, and they sing. This is Julia Whalen. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Vox by Christina Dolcher. This program was directed by Kim Smith, executive producer Diane McKiernan. Text copyright 2018 by Christina Dolcher. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.